Brothers, finish their salah, inshallah. I request you to come closer. It's a very important discussion, very important topic, inshallah. To try and benefit, inshallah. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم نحمده ونصلي ونسلم على رسوله الكريم أما بعد قد قال الله تبارك وتعالى في كلامه المجيد بعد أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الذين آمنوا وتطمئن قلوبهم بذكر الله ألا بذكر الله تطمئن القلوب وقال رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم إن الغنى غنى النفس وكما قال رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم وقال رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم من كانت الدنيا هما فرق الله عنه أمرا وجعل فقره بين عيني ولم يأته من الدنيا إلا ما كتب له ومن كانت الآخرة نية جمع الله له أمرا وجعل غناه في قلبه وأتته الدنيا وهي راغمة أو كما قال رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم وقال رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم اللهم إني أعوذ بك من الهم والحزن وأعوذ بك من العجز والكسل وأعوذ بك من الجبن والبخل وأعوذ بك من غلبة الدين وقهر الرجال أما بعد My dear respected brothers and elders, inshallah brothers, request you to come a bit closer, inshallah. You might be thinking, I don't know if I want to sit for this or not. Inshallah, come a little bit closer, so we all sitting in the gathering and close together, inshallah. Alhamdulillah, this topic of today's, inshallah, Mawlana will deliver the discussion and the topic. It's regarding mental health and the importance of mental health in Islam. So I don't want to give a talk or anything like this because Mawlana is going to be doing that, inshallah. So very briefly, before we start the gathering, I'd just like to call forward one of our students from the madrasa to recite a portion of the Holy Quran just to initiate the gathering. So for this, can I call forward Muhammad Diwan to come forward and recite some Quran, please.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم ألم نشرح لك صدرك ووضعنا عنك وزرك الذي أنقض ظهرك ورفعنا لك ذكرك فإن مع العسر يسرا إن مع العسر يسرا فإذا فرغت فانصب ولا ربك مرغب فارغب
I just told him last minute just to come and recite some Quran. Jazakallah, Muhammad. So inshallah, without any further ado, are you ready? Without any further ado, inshallah, I'll pass the mic over to Maran to make a start, inshallah.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وبه أستعين والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين ورضي الله تعالى عن الصحابة الطيبين والطاهرين وعمن تبعهم بإحسان إلى يوم الدين وبعد. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. إنا أعطيناك الكوثر فصل لربك وانحر إن شانئك هو الأبتر. قال النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم، يقول الله تعالى: أنا عند ظن عبدي بي وأنا معه إذا ذكرني، فإن ذكرني في نفسي ذكرته في نفسي، وإن ذكرني في ملأ ذكرته في ملأ خير منهم، وإن تقرب إلي بشبر تقربت إليه ذراعا، وإن تقرب إلي ذراعا تقربت إليه باعا، وإن أتاني يمشي أتيته حرولا. بارك الله لنا ولكم في القرآن العظيم، ونفعنا وإياكم بالآيات والذكر الحكيم. أستغفر الله لي ولكم ولسائر المسلمين، فاستغفروه إنه هو الغفور الرحيم. Respected brothers, elders, youngsters, mothers, sisters listening upstairs and via the app receiver, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. May the peace, blessings and mercy of Allah be upon you all. I start off by thanking Allah first for this opportunity. It's good to be in front of everyone again after some absence. I'm very busy nowadays, but inshallah with your du'as I can be with you more often. Before I start, there's a few things that I need to make clear, and you, as I go along, it's very long by the way, so if you get bored I apologize in advance. I've had to add everything I can think of just in case I don't get this opportunity again. So, but there's a few things I need to make clear before I start, because this topic is very, it's very prevalent, it's discussed a lot. There's not a lot that's, there's a lot of misconceptions, a lot of mistakes happening. So I need to make a few things clear before I start. It's not good to start off with disclaimers. It's not a, it doesn't instill confidence in you to start off with this, but I have to do it, and you'll see why. I am not a mental health practitioner. The title is mental health, but I am not a mental health practitioner. I'm not a health practitioner. Okay, what am I? I'll go over later. But that's the first thing I need to make clear, just so that everyone's aware. What I discuss now, some of it will be my own views, personal views. Some of it will be my views through work, my qualifications, education. And some of it will be through my Islamic side as well, the Islamic stance. And you'll see as I go along. These are my views. These are views not from personal views. It's from my studies of Quran, Hadith. It's not just my personal views. But these are my personal views. And like I said, I'm not a mental health practitioner, but you will understand why I make this clear. This isn't under any circumstance, it's not here, I'm not here to undermine the subject or to make light of the subject of mental health. Mental health is very, like I said, very prevalent out there. A lot of people suffering with a lot of things. And I'm not here to make light of it, and I'm not here to undermine any of it. This is just an awareness session, an awareness. Awareness for yourselves, inshallah, it's for me as well beneficial. Another thing I need to make clear is there's quite a large age range, very young youngsters I can see, and some my age, and some even older. And then obviously we've got mothers, sisters upstairs as well, and others listening through the receiver, the app. It's very difficult to manage this large age range. Age and then gender as well. So if I need to make clear that I've tried my best to keep everything age appropriate, so that I'm not saying things that children shouldn't be hearing. Also gender appropriate as well, that I'm not saying things that sisters or mothers shouldn't be hearing. So I've tried my best. If I have failed, then it's from me, it's from Shaitan, and if it's beneficial, it's from Allah. How we got here, the reason why this subject and this topic, I have to actually thank Askar Bhai for his concern, fikr. There's obviously, like I said, it's quite prevalent, but I've never got the opportunity to do anything like this. It's again, it's my time, very busy with a lot of things, but because of that push and that drive and that concern, we felt it's needed. It's needed, and it's we need to cover a wide range of subjects. Okay, with the yes, Mufti Saab is doing his bit on the Fridays. Fridays, not everyone turns up on time. People will arrive 1 minute before the azan. So not everyone benefits from it. But our bayans, there's topic subjects, it needs to be much more relevant, more contemporary, and things that the youngsters can associate with now. So this is where it came from. My background, I'll give you a very brief, I don't want to go through my life story. My initial study is Madrasa, Darul Uloom, from 92 onwards. First Hifz, then Alimiyah, and then I finished around 2003. From 2003 onwards, for the next 5-6 years, I taught in various Darul Ulooms, Madinatul Uloom, Kidderminster, Birmingham, two in Birmingham. And then from 2008-09 onwards, that's when I moved to Ashton. I joined your good selves. And from 2009 onwards, I moved away from the Islam. Moved away as in that wasn't my, I weren't teaching anymore. From 2009 onwards, my work has been in children's services. Salford Children's Services, initially as frontline practitioner, 4-5 years, then as advanced practitioner, and then the last 4 years, 5 years as manager, team manager. So I manage a few teams within Salford's Children's Services and the early help team. The reason why I need to make this clear is, if you understand my background, you'll know that's what I did with this presentation. The first half of this is 2009 onwards. So my children's services background, managerial background, that's the first half of this. And the second half will be my first background. Darul Uloom, teaching, Alimiyah, Hifz, all of that side. So I've divided into two sessions almost, and you'll understand why I did this. The first session, I've called it the medical model. This isn't a technical term, it's just something I came up with. So from 2009 onwards, this is my understanding now and my experience, qualifications within children's services. These are some of my things I want to cover. A bit of an introduction to mental health. I want to go over a few mental health conditions. Some of the impact of poor mental health or poor mental well-being. Some self-support, what we can do ourselves to help ourselves. Some practical advice. And then I want to leave you with a few external contacts as well, numbers or organizations that you can contact if someone is feeling like this. And then the second session, I've called it the Islamic model. Again, it's just my term. It's not a technical term, it's just what I've called it. Again, I want to give an introduction. I want to do a bit of a review of the previous slides, the ones that I go through in the first session. And then I want to finish off with a few Quran verses, some hadith, and some examples for us to take away. And my own, this is where I say my own personal view. My personal view from my experience, from my qualifications, my own personal examples. So, what is mental health? Mental health is described by the World Health Organization as a state of mental well-being that enables people to cope with the stresses of life, realize their abilities, learn well, work well, and then contribute to their community. That's the description on the World Health Organization. And another reason why this has come up now, from my work, when we get referrals in through in with it to children's services, we collect data, the reasons why they're coming in. So a referral might come in to us, a child has been, let's use a child has been hit in the mosque. I'm not trying to scare anyone, but let's use this as an example. A child has been hit, or even at home or in school, then the referral might come in. So a referral comes in, and then we collect, when we do the screening, we have to collect data why it's come in. So it'll come in because a child's been chastised, physically chastised. When we collect data, one of the highest reasons now, the ones right at the top, of the reasons for these referrals coming in is mental health. The highest, if not the highest, is mental health. Whether it's child mental health, whether it's adult, but one of the highest reasons for referrals coming into children's services right now, within my local authority anyway, is mental health. So this is another reason why we want to discuss this topic. But this is a brief description of what mental health is. I want to go over a few. I'll go over this very quickly. You might not be able to see, it's quite small on the screen, but I just want to highlight some of the conditions in, this is from the NHS website, and you'll understand why I go through these later on. This is just on one page on the NHS website. There's probably about 30. If you go onto other websites, you'll go into the hundreds and thousands. Hundreds and thousands. Some of these you might have heard of, some of these you might not be aware of. For example, the ones I've highlighted in red, I don't know if you can see from, it's quite small. Things like agoraphobia, this fear, a condition of fear of open spaces or crowded spaces. Anorexia, eating disorder, bulimia, eating disorder, claustrophobia, the opposite of agoraphobia, OCD, obsessive compulsion disorder, anxiety, postnatal depression, PTSD. There's absolutely loads. If you go onto these websites, you'll see there's hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands. There's a reason why I highlight these. And again, it's not to belittle any of it and to undermine it. These are, some of these conditions are very serious and can be quite even life-threatening. But I highlight these just so to make you aware that there's a lot out there, a lot that we don't know about, that we've been shielded from because of our culture, because of our religion. We've been shielded from it, but there's absolutely loads out there. Schizophrenia, selective, there's more. The one right at the end, I don't know if you can see it. Trichotillomania. Anyone heard of trichotillomania? Anyone want to guess, venture a guess? No? It's hair-eating syndrome. Hair-eating syndrome. Again, I don't make light of it. But you'll understand towards the end why I highlight these. Again, this is from the NHS website, current as of now. By tomorrow, this will increase probably another 10 or 15. Some of the ones up from this previous page, the one I want to focus on are things, the ones in red, things like stress, anxiety, this will be my main focus, not on the others, and I'll explain why. Some of the feelings, again, this is from NHS website, that you might be going through if people are suffering from things like stress, anxiety. the effect on the, on the, on the brain. I've got a slide after this that I want to go into detail about how it affects the brain. Stress, there's a hormone actually called the stress hormone, cortisol. Some of you here, you might be more qualified than me. If you are, feel free to chip in. I'm fine with that. But there's a stress hormone called cortisol, and it has huge impact. I'll go through it on the next slide. But stress, suffering from these things can cause a lot of stress. Anxiety, fear, panic. Stress, anxiety is a normal feeling. Everyone feels it. So we're not talking about the normal anxiety. It's where it's crippling, where it completely stops you from doing things. This is what we're referring to. Anxiety, low mood, sadness, depression, feeling lonely, grief after bereavement, loss, feeling of anger, loneliness, especially in older people. I've highlighted dementia and Alzheimer's. Our community especially is suffering a lot from this, especially our first generation migrants. I don't know which generation everyone is. Some of you look very young, some of you look more older. I am second generation migrant, so my parents came first here, and then I was born here. The first generation migrants, the ones that come here, they don't speak the language, don't know the culture. They just came to work, earn money, create a better life for themselves and for us. A lot of them have ended up with dementia, Alzheimer's. Why? One of the biggest reasons is loneliness, do you know? One of the biggest reasons is loneliness, and it's a travesty, absolute travesty, that they came. They came, they did their bit, they worked. We're here now because of them. If they did nothing, we don't know where we would be. They did their bit, and now where are they? They're lonely. The kids have got no time for them. The kids have got no time for them. They're busy with the grandchildren. They have no time for them. The grandchildren can't even speak the language. I'm talking about my own example. I don't need to go anywhere else. My children, they don't speak. My parents speak Bangla. My children, they don't speak Bangla. I've never spoken with them, so how can they speak Bangla? Same with Urdu, very little. So they can't communicate with the grandchildren. They can't have the conversation with us because we're too busy. And they've spent a large part of their, especially towards the end, in loneliness. My father-in-law, he's got Alzheimer's. When he got the diagnosis, they were giving him treatment. The treatment was do some puzzles, do crosswords, word search, play the games on the app. What's his interest in on TV? Get him engaged in that. But the problem is they can't do this. He doesn't speak the language. He can't relate to anything that's on TV. All of his associates, friends, they've all passed away. So this is what's happening, whether it's especially amongst our male elders, but with also our mothers as well. And I call it nothing short of travesty, and it's a shame. It's a shame, and we should be, if we've contributed to it, we should be ashamed. We should be ashamed. This is the culture of this is Western culture, Western civilization. This is not our culture. Our culture, our religion has saved us from a lot of these things. But unfortunately, we've been influenced by different cultures, different civilizations. We're thinking this is what's good because it's on TV. It's not. Hold on to your culture, hold on to your religion. There's a lot of good in it. So loneliness has a big impact. The reason why, when I say the referrals have shot up and it's all around mental health, a lot of it has been from COVID, do you know? COVID and lockdown and the loneliness that came with it. People were stuck in one house, adults, children, everyone stuck. It created a lot of issues within families, within relationships. And the children, now they've, a lot of them, the absence from school, it's gone through the roof because they don't want to go back to school. So it's a huge thing, loneliness. And we'll see as I go along to some of the tips and solutions, you'll see how we can counter that. Some of the more serious effects of things like stress, anxiety, and other mental health conditions is where it leads to full psychosis, hallucinations, self-harm, even more serious. So we don't want to get there. We don't want to learn this by seeing someone else go through it. This is what's happening. When I started 2009, it was still very... Our people, our community, the non-white community, the referrals were very few, very few, probably 3%, 5%. Now it's at least 10, 20% is Asian, South Asian, Arab, Muslim. The same issues as everyone else, as our non-Muslim counterparts. Same issues. And I've been saying this since 2009, right from the beginning, that we might be shielded from this because of mosque, because of culture, because of religion, but our kids are still going to the same school. They are associating with this, with families that these things are going on. So we can't just shield them from it. We need to find ways of tackling it. We need to find ways of addressing it before it comes home to roost on it, and that's what's happened. And again, this is from NHS website. It's not from me, it's from the NHS website. The first one on this list, stress and the effect on the brain, I just want to without getting too technical, this is the most simplest one I could find online. I just want to go over some of you might be more qualified than me. If I'm wrong, you can just raise your hand and tell me I'm wrong. The brain, these are the different parts. There's much more, but this is one way of dividing it. These are the different parts of the brain. We've got the, I don't know if there's no feed upstairs. No. So just the different parts of the brain, we've got the frontal lobe, parietal lobe, occipital lobe, temporal lobe, brainstem, and right at the end, the cerebellum. I won't go into this, is too technical, but all I want to do is point out each part has got its own function. The brain, each part has got it. If you've got time, look it up. It's fascinating. Each part has got its own function. If you look at the frontal cortex or the frontal lobe, it's in charge of things like thinking, memory, behavior, movement. So it makes sense of things. It makes sense of things. There was a study with footballers a while ago because of too much heading the ball, that they had it was having an impact, negative impact. It's because that's the frontal lobe. A lot of it is to do with the thinking and memory. The bits towards the back, this is actually just one side. When they explained to us when we were doing the qualification training, they used to say, if you hold your hand up like this, if you put your thumb in the middle and the four fingers around it, just think of this. This is the brain. So think of this is the stem, the back cerebellum, the bit inside is the temporal lobe, and within that is something called the amygdala, and then the two sides as well, the two hemispheres. The right side of the brain controls the left side of the body. Left side of the brain controls the right side of the body. The reason why I'm pointing this out is each part has got its own function. If one part is having to concentrate too much, if the bit in the middle, the temporal lobe, there's a bit in there called the amygdala. The amygdala is, think of it as the alarm, just like a fire alarm. It's like that. It's like an alarm. When something happens, then the alarm goes off, and then it goes in, gets into motion, it starts preparing. If you think back to the caveman days, the caveman in his cave to eat, survive, it has to do with its hunting, killing of the animal, getting the animal, feeding his family. If you think back to this caveman, when an animal or a dangerous animal, a tiger, lion, comes, the brain has systemed itself. It's made a system using this. The amygdala comes into, and then it starts preparing the brain and the rest of the body. What it needs to do is move all the energy, hormones, everything else that's needed, say for example around the stomach, because nothing is needed around the stomach anymore. You're not going to be eating when a lion's coming to attack you. You're not eating anything. You don't need to digest anything. It moves it away, things like adrenaline, and it moves it to the arms, to the legs. It gets the body ready in a state, it's called fight or flight. It gets it in a state where it's fight or flight. It either fights the lion or it runs away from it. So all the energy is needed on the adrenaline needs to go to the limbs. This is what the alarm does. So if for example, you can see there's different parts, there's language, touch, there's vision. If one part is having to concentrate much more, the other parts starts losing, it starts missing out. So you can't think clearly. You won't be able to remember things properly. When someone gets, for example, angry, when someone gets really angry, fit of rage, maybe in the car, road rage. When you get road rage, someone's cut you in and then you've been chasing him for a half a mile because you want to let him know. That when you go into a fit of rage, that body starts preparing itself. The body starts preparing. So it starts moving away from some of these other parts. So when it moves away from things, that's why when someone is angry, you say things and you do things, afterwards you regret. Has everyone been in this situation? Yes? When you regret, it's because you can't think clearly. You can't think clearly. The stress hormone that I mentioned before, cortisol, it almost blocks it. It blocks it. You're not thinking clearly. You're not thinking rationally. So stress has got plays a big part. Stress, anxiety. When it's with children, it's even worse. When it's children, when they're still developing, especially the early age range. And if I have time, if I get another opportunity, I'll cover this as well around child development. But it's even more important. So it's very important that we have our culture of parenting, the way, for example, we've been parented in madrasa, it was just either stick or you learn. There was nothing else. But this constant staying in a constant state of anxiety, fear, it plays havoc with the brain. With the brain, with development, especially with children. So we need to move away from it. We need to move away from whatever we've been used to and getting the beats, the chappal, and then doing our learning. We need to move away from it. It has long impact. Some of the things we can do for ourselves, self-support. Have some me time, what they call have some me time. Honestly, take some time out for yourselves, especially to, I say, for upstairs sisters and sisters listening. We don't, especially in our culture, we might get to do our thing, a lot of the men, husbands, fathers, but the women are a lot of the time stuck at home. Stuck at home, only it's either kids, cooking, feeding, sleeping, and then it's the same thing. Everyone needs their time. I know this is changing a lot, especially our modern and the Western civilization, but Everyone needs their time. If you don't have your time, or if you don't give that time to your wife, spouse, even to kids, if you don't get that, things will get on top of you. So you just spare only a few minutes. It doesn't need to be used, have to go out and have a full day out, no. Even if it's 5 minutes, even if it's doing nothing, honestly, even if it's doing nothing, you're going out into your car and just sit in your driver's seat 5 minutes just by yourself, because that's my time. Even that's good. But start, you're instilling in it ourselves and then with family as well. Sleep. Again, this topic is too long for me to cover, but sleep deprivation, it's massive. I'll have to go back to the brain, but it's massive. There's not enough time for me to go over it. You need enough sleep. Check on websites, NHS, and the correct amount of sleep. You need the correct amount of sleep. Just think of sleep deprivation. In some countries, it's a form of torture. It's a form of torture. Now you think that's the kind of impact it is. If you understand that it's a form of torture, from that you'll understand how important it is. So correct sleep, right amount of sleep, especially with kids. From even my own experience, we don't have any system, routine with kids. It's so important with kids. My kids, the youngest she's 7 now. And the eldest, he's 13, but he's still got the same routine as when he was 4. Same routine. Bedtime is still, I think bedtime is only increased by 1 hour. In 9 years, it's increased by 1 hour, 9 o'clock. I go to my friends' houses, cousins' houses, they're all night. 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock, no timetable. Wake up whenever you want. It has a huge impact. So enough sleep. Challenge yourself. If you want to look after yourself, you need to be challenging yourself. We can't be happy with where we're at in anything, deen or dunya, both. We become, when our scholars tell us about being content, having contentment, we think that means doing nothing. Being content means, so you just sit there. That's not content. Content as in you be happy with what you've got. It doesn't mean you don't aspire for anything else. It doesn't mean you don't challenge yourself. The reason why I say challenge yourself, if you don't challenge yourself, what I discussed earlier about dementia, Alzheimer's, this is what will happen to you. This is what will happen to us if we're not challenging ourselves mentally, physically. Anyone who goes gym, you'll know when you're doing a certain routine, your body gets used to it. You've got your muscle memory, it remembers it, even with your stamina. So if you're doing half an hour on the treadmill, the next day your body's used to it. You have to push it. If it's 30 minutes, try 35 minutes. If you're doing 50 kg, challenge yourself, do it a bit more. Your body will get used to it, your mind will get used to it if you're not challenging yourself. Avoid unhealthy habits. And unfortunately, in our community, it's as unhealthy as it gets when it comes to things like food. The other things I'm not even going to go into, smoking, everything else, I'm not even going to go into that. There shouldn't be any discussion around it. But unhealthy habits, I'll just concentrate just on food. Our community, unfortunately, there's things that are haram, alcohol, if you don't smoke, drugs, everything. The bits that are halal, we've gone so extreme in it that we've made this doubtful as well now, because we're going into excess. Everything has to be in moderation. With eating, the famous hadith about dividing your stomach into three, half for third for food, third for water, and third empty for air. Ours is three-thirds is food. There's not even space for water, let alone air. We can't be, and especially our diet. I don't want anyone to be offended when I say this, but our diet is not suitable for this country, for this environment, for this weather, and our lifestyle. It's not suitable. Our diet, our parents, grandparents, what they had, that diet was for there. They ate quick energy. They were out straight away on the fields. Fields, manual labor. Our diet is to go from here into the car, few steps into the car, and from the car you're driving into work, few steps into the office, then you sit on your chair, and that's it. Not everyone, but majority of it is sedentary lifestyle. If we're going to gym or if you're into sports, then maybe every now and again exercise. But this is, because everything is so easy here, this is our lifestyle for majority. And the diet we've got, it's rich in fat, trans fat, it's oil, our curries, salad. The base of our diet is, if it's our Bangladeshi brothers, then rice, and not even it's white rice, and again Pakistani brothers as well, it's roti, and especially the portion size. The portion size is for working in the fields. If you're not working in the fields here, that isn't our portion size, and that shouldn't be the diet. Eat, yes, have it. Have as much as you want. You might be looking at me and think, saying, the pot calling the kettle black. But have your fix. But the portion size, that isn't what's required for our sedentary lifestyle here. When I first started work, when I mingled with non-Muslims, the first time in my life was 2009. Believe it or not. Because I went to madrasa 92. So from 92 onwards, it's been in mosque, madrasa, amongst our own community. The first time was in 2009, in my 30s. And when I saw their meals, a lot of my colleagues' meals, for example, rice. The rice portion was this big, one handful, that was the portion. And I saw this and I thought, this is what I give my four-year-old. This is what I was having when I was 5, 6. And then I looked into it, and the reason why it's so small, it's carbs, it's full of carbs. Carbohydrate is fast, quick releasing energy, something you need straight away. So if you've had a workout, come back, fine, have carbs. You need to replenish. If you're going to work and sitting in an office desk for 5, 6 hours a day, you don't need this amount of carbs. If you're going on the field, have it. Otherwise, don't. So this is our lifestyle. I don't want to concentrate too much on it, but it's very unhealthy. It's unhealthy. Get advice from GP, dietitians. This is why all of our people, everyone's got diabetes, blood pressure, everyone's got it. We need to change lifestyle, eating. Help other people. There's a lot people get from helping other people. It's unbelievable, and I'll go through it more on the five ways to well-being. Work smarter, not harder. I don't want to be too critical and self-loathing. I'm speaking about myself as well, not everyone else. We have come from a system where the work isn't smart. There's no planning for it. There's no preparing for it. It's just jumping in, do work as hard as you can, do as many hours as you can, earn as much money as you can, and then that's it. Celebrate. A lot of the time, our work, if it was smarter, we can get away with doing less work. It'll be more productive, more efficient. So find ways of doing things that are smarter, not just working harder and bringing stress on yourselves. Try to be positive. Another really important, be positive, stay positive, and then hang around with people who are positive as well. In our work, we call we divide people into two types. One type we call them radiators, and one are called drains. The drains are the negative people. They drain, they suck the life out of you, they suck the positivity out of anything. They're the drains. And the radiators are the ones that ooze the positivity. They give out warmth, they give out love, affection. Stay with people like that, not people who are just negative. Negativity is easy. It's not difficult to be negative. When you look at the negativity is positive, is popular. If you look at the news headlines, news channels, everything's negative. If it's positive, they won't be able to sell. When's the last time you saw a headline, the Prime Minister's had a good day, he's done very well? They won't be able to sell. It needs to be negative. It needs to be all the things that are going bad in the world. And it's not all bad. So be positive and stay around positive people as well, with friends, family, associates. Take control. I will cover this on my next slide. And that's part of it, accepting the things that you can't change. I'll cover it on the next one. Mindfulness. Has anyone heard of mindfulness? Anyone? No? It's quite okay. Where have you heard of? Is that your field? You work? No. Just students. Okay. It's quite recent, so his students, so it might, because it's not, it hasn't been around very long, but it's basically the thinking behind it is noticing things, being in the present, being in the moment. It's changing, shifting your focus into what's now. The reason is because studies show a lot of the time we spend most of our time thinking about or worrying about what's the past, that's already happened, you can't change anyway, or the future, something that hasn't happened. Most of our time we spent worrying about what's already happened or what will happen. And both of these things are out of our control. Future relatively out of our control. What we need to focus is on now, being now. I can't go into all of it. It'll take too long. But if you've got time, look it up. Mindfulness is very good. There's a saying, yesterday is history, tomorrow is a mystery, and today is a gift. That's why they call it present. Gift, present, that's why they call it present. So to concentrate on the now, not on history, not on past, and not on the future. And then lastly, 5 ways to well-being. Have you come across 5 ways to well-being as well, with this brother? It's quite, again, NHS has picked it up. If you've got time, look into it. I will come back to all of this, and I'll show you the link between Islam, Allah, Quran, Hadith, and all of these things that NHS is telling us. I'll give you the link between what Allah tells us. So the 5 ways to well-being is connect, stay active, learn, notice things, and then give. Connect. This is a huge part of connecting, whether it's through the mosque, friends, family. We have to say alhamdulillah, thumma alhamdulillah. This is still very big in our communities. We've got that link. If you look at the families that we work with, the mom doesn't want the child. They'll bring the child and drop the child off at our doorstep. She doesn't want the child. So let alone wider family connection, even immediate family, there's no connection. The child is upstairs, parents are downstairs. Child's on the phone, parents are downstairs. This is creeping in to our community, so I wouldn't look outside and look smug. This is creeping in. We need to be aware. They're being aware now. This is on NHS website. They know the importance of connecting and keeping connection. So keep that connection. Friends, family, mosque, wherever you go, connect. Number 2 is active, stay active. And again, it's too big for me to go over, But if you want to look it up, look at the benefits of staying active, exercise, all the feel-good hormones, the endorphins, dopamine, look into it and you'll see it's fascinating. Not just the impact on the body, the impact, obviously, you get that benefit, but on the mind, the kind of impact it has on the mind, you can look it up. Learn new things. Again, like before, not being content with just, I know something, that's it, I'm finished, alhamdulillah. No, learn, always learn new things. Notice things around you, again, being within the moment. Give in all ways, not just money, but give your time, give your money, give your time, give your friendship, companionship, anything, just give. Volunteering is when I say that, this is being picked up now by everyone, especially Western civilization. Even they know, I'm involved with a lot of recruitment. When as soon as you go through application forms, shortlisting, when we see volunteered for this, volunteer for that, it takes it up a notch. They're looking for it, they're happy. Because they know if someone's willing to do it in their free time, it says something about a person's character. So these are the five ways to, like I said, there's not enough time for me to go over them, but please look it up. The bit that I did at the beginning, the taking control and the circle of influence. I just want to cover this very quickly. There's someone called Stephen Covey. He came up with this. There's bits that you can control, that's in my control. There's things, another circle outside it, where you might not be able to control it, but you might be able to influence it. And there's things right at the outside where it's out of your control. So those three things. Things you can control right here, right now. I can control now whether I carry on or not. I can control this. There's things you can influence. You might not be able to control it, but you can influence it. And there's things that are out of your control. The things that are out of your control, we don't get stressed over it. We don't bother with it. These are some of the things listed on here. I don't know if you can see. The things that are out of our control, the weather, natural disasters, other people's behavior, political issues, war, these things are out of our control. So there's no point wasting our energy on these things. Unfortunately, a lot of people, all the focus goes into this. How many discussions do you know about politics? Even in the mosque, about politics, what's happening, where, and not just politics here, politics back home. If we can't influence this, if politics is very difficult to influence here, what do you think we're going to do about back home? But everyone's discussing these things. These things, we're wasting time and energy with it. We need to put the energy into things you can control and things you can influence. For example, who you surround yourself with. I can influence that, I can control. I can choose who my friend is. I can choose whether to come to the mosque or to go somewhere else on a Sunday after Zuhr. You can choose and you have chosen. So these are things, the things that are in our control, we influence, we try and control, we try and have an impact. Things out of our control, we don't spend too much energy on those. And lastly, before I go on to the Islamic side, these are just a few support. The last slide was what we can do for ourselves. This is more external. Obviously, if someone is suffering really badly from mental health and a condition, if it's an emergency, it's always 999. It's not even social services. Even if it's children, it's 999 is first. If someone comes to us, we say the same thing, 999. If it's not urgent, it's 111. You've got the NHS website, loads on there, a lot of good information. We've got our Greater Manchester Mental Health Support Service. It's part of NHS, but separate. We work with very closely within social services. You've got Mind, charity, very good charity around mental health, Mind, and then Young Minds as well. Every mind matters. Another charity, I think they used to be called Healthy Minds. And I think they're called Every Mind Matters now. Hub of Hope. This is like a, it's almost like a glossary, as a directory of different support services. You've got obviously Samaritans, quite famous. Papyrus, they deal with prevention and suicide prevention. I think with most people, whether it's brothers, sisters, the first port of call should be GP. If it's something that's it's getting too much for you, it should be GP. GP can prescribe you things. You can refer to talking therapies, counseling, and then CBT, cognitive behavior therapy. A lot of these services are available through the GP. Any questions before I move on to the next? It won't be very long. I know you've been here a long time now. I won't take much more of your time. Anything you want to ask, say, comment before I move on? No? The second bit. Now, if the first bit I'm saying I'm not qualified, or I'm saying it's not my field, this, I would like to think, is my field. The Islamic side, and what does Islam say? Does Islam speak of mental health? Does Islam say anything about mental health? Well, let's have a look. One example I keep giving is, out of our five pillars, what's the first pillar? What's the first pillar of Islam? Shahada. Shahada is not physical. We don't physically give shahada. It's belief. It's belief. You can say the shahada, but the actual kalima, the first pillar, is the belief. So belief is mental. It's not physical. Another example I give is, if we look back at the Prophet's time, the Prophet's entire, the 63 years, the Prophet received, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, the Prophet received prophethood at what age? 40. So 40 years before he even reached, got revelation. After 40, there was 23 years. In the 23 years, the Quran was revealed over that 23 years. From 40 and then the 23, even after 40, the first commandment, or the first of the pillars after Shahada, let's just say Namaz. Namaz was, there's some discussion about exactly when, but we know Namaz, the five Namaz anyway. When did we get the five Salah? Isra Mi'raj, when the Prophet went for Mi'raj. This was, most agree anyway, it was after Hijrah. So after Hijrah, when the Prophet received prophethood, age of 40, lived and then passed away 63. First 13 years was in Mecca, and then the last 10 was in Medina. So the first 13 years, then the Hijrah. So if you add the 40 and the 13, that's 53 years. 53 years, and then the first sort of commandment of Namaz. What do you think that 40, 53, was it a waste? What was going on in that 40, 53 years? That 40, 53 years was on this, was on belief, was on the mental state, was on conviction, was on to such a level that when the commandments did come in the last only 10, 15 years, when the commandments did come, it was snapped up. The commandment of alcohol, when alcohol became forbidden. Alcohol being forbidden was over stages. The first stage was more, it's got some benefit, alcohol, it's got some harm. Then the next stage was, the harm is more than the good, so it's not good for you. Then the third stage was, no, alcohol is banned, is forbidden. Their mental state and the iman was to such a level, there were some companions, they had the bottle in their mouth and they threw it when they heard of the verse. So much so that there were rivers of alcohol flowing. Rivers of alcohol, that's how much they got rid of it. This is what I call, this is the mental state and the mental well-being. Unfortunately, what we've got today is we've left the iman, we've taken iman as, I'm Muslim, alhamdulillah, great. What have you done to become Muslim? Nothing, you're just born. We were just born as Muslim. But we've taken this as iman, and that's it, it's finished. What is iman? What is shahada? Kalima. What's kalima? La ilaha illallah. Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah. That's it. If it was that, that amount of time wouldn't have been spent before. It's something to think about. Does Islam speak of mental health? Yes, it does. And I put the focus just on iman. Secondly, Islam has already provided the solution. Okay. One of my colleagues is atheist, so he's very he's a man of science, so he doesn't believe in these. He says it to me quite direct that these scriptures, Bible, Quran, all these religious scriptures, they're just fairy tales. He tells me they're quite direct that these are just fairy tales. Fairy tales, books of stories. There's nothing in there about science. Nothing in there about mental health, nothing there about physical health. He's not interested. He's a big fan of Richard Dawkins. He's a Darwinist, so he believes in evolution. I've had these arguments with him many times about the theory of evolution, and he still thinks it's a fact, even though it's called theory of evolution. So he used to say to me that these fairy tales, these scriptures, where's the science in there? There's nothing around mental health. There's nothing in there. It's just stories. I told him, yes, it is stories. The Quran, majority of the Quran is stories. And for a good reason. The stories, you have to think this was revealed 1400 years ago. It's not what he's telling me now. It was 1400 years ago. It was stories were the things that were motivating, giving examples, linking to the past, the previous scriptures. This is what was more important. And secondly, about science, because he speaks so much about science, he wants the Quran to tell him 1,000 years ago about what's going to happen now. The science he knows now didn't tell him this same fact even 10 years ago. What was science 10 years ago, today is different. Not all science, but my point is it keeps changing. It keeps changing, and it'll forever change, because it's not, Allah hasn't sent down science. So it'll keep changing. So what he wants the Quran to tell him now is this point I'm making. Don't come to me now, or don't go to the scripture now, don't go to Allah and tell me what should I do about my mental health. My mental health is bad. Don't come and ask for the solution when Islam already gave you the solution. Islam already gave you the directions in Quran, in the Prophet's lifestyle, in the Hadith. If you followed it, I guarantee you all the conditions that I've just gone through, none of these would exist. And this is what I said at the beginning, that I'm not belittling it. I'm saying, from my experience, a lot of the problems we're dealing with, even in my social services, children's services, and the entire world, the problems we're trying to solve now through so-called science and other discoveries are the problems created by us by moving away from Quran. Moving away from even religion. If the country stayed to its roots, even with Christianity, it would still be better. It would still be better. But now it's completely moved away. The world is an atheist world. So all of these systems, NHS, our conditions, health conditions, mental health, it's in an atheist world. It's not on any guidance. It's not on any morality. People might claim morality, Everyone just says, we know what's morality. We know what's good and bad. We don't need the Quran to tell us. the morality that is being described, it's subjective. One day this is morality, the other day another thing is morality. 30, 40 years ago, and I have to be careful, some of my youngsters here, but homosexuality was it was illegal here. So morality that time was, this isn't moral. And the last 10 years, 20 years, probably before that, but now the drive towards it and the push is unbelievable. I've not seen any drive of anything. There's so many things that we disagree with and religion disagrees with, but I've not seen a drive like this LGBTQ plus minus agenda. It's pushed everywhere. Everywhere. Schools, kids, films, movies, and even a specific focus with the two Muslims. The two Muslims. No other. We disagree with so many things. We don't have pork. We don't have so many things. We don't drink. But when have you seen a drink and or a pork company advertising to Muslims? They won't waste their time because they know. But with this, there seems to be, no, it's okay. It's okay. It doesn't say it in the Quran. Some of these guys have become experts on Quran. It doesn't say it in the Quran. It's okay. You can be LGBTQ and you can be Muslim. This drive, I don't know what it is. Only Allah knows. I've not seen this drive or this push of this agenda with any other area. Allah protect us, protect our children. So the point I was making to him was this, that these, so we've got the solutions. If we follow them word by word, you won't need to come back and ask me now for solution. So if I don't want to spend too much time going through the back, but some of the things we've already discussed, the five ways to well-being, eating healthily, I gave you the hadith, staying active, learning. Learning is the hadith and Quran is full of learning. Connecting, huge. Again, we get it from our culture, from our religion. What do you think this jamaat is about? We have a lot of our a'mal that's infiradi a'mal. It's namaz by ourselves, Quran, tilawat. But this specific a'mal just on, that has to be in a congregation. Jum'ah has to be in a congregation. These things are about connecting. It's not just turning up for namaz and going out. These things are about connecting. Connect, learn, being active. I can't remember what the other ones were. But Islam has given us the solutions already. Islam gives us a sense of purpose. Not just sense of purpose, the biggest sense of purpose, greatest. The reason why I use sense of purpose, I did this training once with a charity called Papyrus. They're a suicide prevention charity. I apologize if there's youngsters, but suicide prevention charity. Now when they went through this, they started off the training with, what do you think, they put the question to us, what do you think is the biggest thing that gets a person out of bed in the morning? What do you think it is? And everyone gave different answers, work, money, family, children, religion, coming to the mosque, Fajr, all of these answers. And then they said the basic or the thing that connects all of these things is just sense of purpose. The biggest thing that gets a person out of bed in the morning, gives them that motivation, is just a sense of purpose. That could be anything. Whatever you get your sense of purpose from, it's that. But it's basically a sense of purpose. Islam gives us the biggest sense of purpose. These, everything else, money, kids, family, these things are temporary. All of it is temporary. So whatever you have for sense of purpose, money is here one day, it's gone the other. Work is here one day, other day is gone. Even family, unfortunately, kids are here, they turn 20, 30, they'll be doing their own things. Islam gives a purpose that doesn't end, not in this life. The purpose, greatest sense of purpose is the Akhirah. And without having that, I can't explain to you that how much this helps our, when we say sense of purpose, how much it saves us from so many things we won't know. Until Day of Judgment, until everything's revealed to us, we won't know. But this is the greatest sense of purpose, the hereafter. We know that when we get up, we have to work for the hereafter. Whether it's work to earn money so that I can nourish myself, nourish my children so that they can be good people, come into the mosque, pray their salah, do their fast. All of it, if we link it to the Akhirah, it never ends in this world. So one of the biggest things that Islam has given us is this sense of purpose to keep our mental well-being good. And then there's other things, spirituality, worship. These things are, again, there's not enough time. Remembrance, dhikr. Allah tells us Himself, Allah bi dhikrillahi tatma'innul qulub. With the remembrance of Allah, the heart finds peace. So if you're looking for well-being, we can't, yes, my first half, I went through some of the practical solutions, but ultimately we have to turn back to religion, to Allah. I just want to mention, there is, that list that I showed you before is to do with this. There is an over, and I won't take much longer, I appreciate your time, it's been long. There is an overexposure, it's happening, not just with this mental health, but with a lot of things. What I mean by overexposure is, something is happening at the end of my road. I don't know about it. There might be someone dying at the end of my road. I don't know about it. For that information to reach me, anyone giving me that information has to think, do I need that information? Do I need to know it? If I do know, need to know, what's the benefit? What's the interest? If I don't, then there's no need to expose. There's no need to have that exposure. The reason why I say this is, overexposure has led to this mental health crisis. And I promise you, you won't hear this from and people in work, and they won't say this, but I am, this is my personal view. There has been an overexposure. The list that I went through before, 50, 60, if you go to other sites, there's hundreds. Some of these things are natural human emotions. Anger, everyone gets angry, everyone gets stressed, everyone gets anxious. By exposing everyone, by putting it mass to everyone, that there's something called this, there's something called that. That's why I didn't spend too much time on it. That there's this, you might have this, this might be wrong with you, this might be wrong with you, maybe you need this, maybe you need this. If I tell someone this, if they weren't needing it before, they will need it now. If someone wasn't feeling stressed before, and if I keep telling them, they will be stressed now. And what's caused it? I've caused it. There is a overdiagnosis, I guarantee you. The health professionals, they'll tell you themselves, but maybe not on record. There is an over, especially when it comes to mental health. I see it with children day in, day out. Every single parent wants a label, a diagnosis. They've got this wrong, they've got that wrong. We need this, we need that. And there's an over-diagnosis. The overexposure, it isn't, when I say it's not just restricted to this, what our kids are exposed to, on through TV, media, their phones. This is another example of overexposure. Like I said before, everything on these devices is negative. If it's news, we've got our 24-hour news culture that's started. If you're gonna have a 24-hour news channel, you need to find things to put on there. Okay, you need to find things, especially when you've got more viewers. If you want the viewers, if you want the money, you need to find things. So whether someone knows about it or not, they are finding things to put on there so that you can get viewers, viewership, and get money advertising. This is all exposure that's not needed. It's not needed. The media will tell you, well, it's in public interest. Are you public? Your media is you're a handful of people. Who's made you in charge of public interest? Public interest, the public will tell you whether it's interest or not. It's not in public interest. This is unnecessary exposure. And when it's just negative, this is the kind of impact it will have on you. If you weren't thinking about it, how do you think the vilifying of Muslims ever since 9/11 and Twin Towers, how do you think this happened? If a lot of these people had never heard, in America it's quite famous, some of them hadn't even heard of Quran before 9/11. Before it was on the news, they'd never heard of it. So this is an exposure that's not always needed, and sometimes it's damaging. We need to be careful as well, being overexposed. That's why I didn't want to spend too much time on it. If I tell you, or if I start telling the kids this, that, and if I fill this up with all the various conditions, you'll be thinking it more. You'll be thinking it more, and then it'll stay in your mind. There's something called the self-fulfilling prophecy. Self-fulfilling prophecy is if you tell someone, keep telling someone something, you're this, you're this, you're this, eventually they start believing in it and they start acting towards it. In Nazi Germany, there was this chief, Joseph Goebbels. I don't know if anyone's heard of him. He used to say, and this is part of the Nazi propaganda, that he used to say, make a lie, tell a lie, make it big enough, and then repeat it often enough. You make a lie, make it big. It doesn't even have to be small. Make it a big lie, but repeat it often enough and people will start believing in it. That phrase is now termed as the Goebbelian lie. Making a lie and repeating it so that people start believing in it. Look at the state of our politics. Look at American politics. How does someone like Donald Trump, how does he... Just look at what's going on with him now. But he still, if you speak to his supporters, how do you think he became president? Repeats the same thing he wants people to know. His followers, his supporters keep saying the same thing. And now it doesn't matter what happens. It doesn't matter what happens, his supporters will never, they won't back down. This has never happened before. You can look into history. It's never happened before. They've got a situation now. He could go for the 2024 elections. He could become president and he could be running the country in jail. He could be running the most powerful country in jail. Obviously, that's far-fetched, but that's the kind of scenario. Doesn't matter what he says, doesn't matter what people say, doesn't matter how many things are brought against him, because it's been repeated often enough, people start believing it. And this is what's happening. And this is why I keep saying about being positive, you need to repeat those positive things. The negative things, just don't bother yourself with it. Everything is around negativity. Just ignore it. Even when it comes to religion, my plea to everyone, when it's negative, even if it's from me, and I've made this mistake in the past, even if it's from me, if it's negative, if it's all around bad things, or ignore it. Ignore it. And if someone is constantly giving you negative messages, go somewhere else. Go somewhere else. Listen to someone else. Concentrate on the positive. Oof. The next bit I put on there is around jinn and black magic. I know there's youngsters here. I don't want to go into detail. Only reason I put this on there is because I want to connect it to mental health. Please, I beg you, we have got a situation now, in whether it's here, whether it's back home, where anything that happens, any calamity in life, it's always associated with this. Something happens, I've lost my job, oh, it must be this. Someone's done this, someone's done that. Someone is not feeling well mentally, they've got mental health condition, they're feeling whatever. I'll give you an example. My brother, he's epileptic. He's got epilepsy. So before he got diagnosed, obviously you get fits, you have fits. When you have fits, especially the more severe ones, it can look quite, I don't know if you've seen, can look quite bad, especially with the eyes, bloodshot eyes. When he went through this, this was the first thing that was suggested by everyone, that it must be this. This has happened, that's happened. We need this, we need that. Anything that happens, like I said, person loses his job, it's because of this. Maybe you were no good, that's why you lost your job. What happened to our own actions? Have we got no accountability? And more importantly, what about Allah? Is Allah still around? Could it be something's happened to me that's negative? Could it be Allah, can't He punish me for my sins? We've taken all of this away and it's become all about this. It's become all about this for a good reason, because people have put this in our minds. There's a lot of charlatans making a lot of money. I apologize if anyone's offended by this, but there's a lot of people making money from this. So it's in their interest to keep it in people's minds. So anything that happens, especially to do with mental health, we start looking at this. This issue, this topic, in the Quran, there's one surah named this. And then there's other few examples, handful. قُلْ أَعُوذُ بِرَبِّ النَّاسِ قُلْ أَعُوذُ بِرَبِّ الْفَلَقِ is about when it happened to the Prophet. Other, like times of Sulaiman alayhi salam and their test, handful of examples. The Quran isn't just about this. But when we come across something, we make it all about this. If it was all about this, then the Quran would have been full of these examples. It's not. So my request, I'm not saying to completely ignore this. This is our belief. We have to believe it. There's a surah called this. We have to believe it's part of our faith. But please explore the medical side as well. I'm not saying to do just one. Explore both. Explore mental conditions. Like epilepsy, when you go to the doctor, they just said it's an imbalance. They call it imbalance. Chemical imbalance in the brain. This is what happens. That's their explanation of it. Do both. Do not turn to this and only this, and don't line people's pockets with this. There's a lot of people that are good, people who are doing ruqya. There's a lot of good things out there. I know there's a lot that are just keeping it in the forefront just for this. I just want to go over four verses of the Quran. The reason I end with this, the Quran verses and hadith, the reason why I say these is, apart from the sense of purpose, when someone loses a sense of purpose, the other side that gets people stressed, depressed, and a lot of these mental health conditions is because they have no hope. They lose hope. And as Muslims, we are not allowed to lose hope. Remember, it's not even a choice. There's no permissibility in it. this, I don't think I have it on here. In the story of Yusuf alayhi salam, and my students will know covering it in Qasas. In the story of Yusuf alayhi salam, when he sends his sons, Yaqub alayhi salam, when he sends his sons back to Yusuf, he forbids them from losing hope. He tells them, he forbids them from losing hope in Allah and Allah's mercy. And he describes it as losing hope. The people who lose hope in Allah's mercy are only the kuffar, are only the disbelievers. So if we lose hope, it's explained, described as disbelief. So we cannot lose hope. Whatever comes, whatever calamity, whatever problem, mentally, physically, we cannot lose hope. Allah does not give that permission. And we have to use some of these verses as encouragement. The first one is, say, my servants, قُلْ يَا عِبَادِيَ الَّذِينَ أَسْرَفُوا عَلَىٰ أَنفُسِهِمْ. Those say, O Muhammad, to the people, say, O my slaves, those who have transgressed themselves, those who have done, in Urdu, ziyadati, when they've done too much on themselves, they've gone against themselves. La taqnatu min rahmatillah, do not despair in the mercy of Allah. Inna Allaha yaghfiru dhunuba jami'a, He forgives all sins. Innahu wal ghafurur rahim. So he says you cannot lose and you cannot despair in Allah's mercy. There's in alam nashrah inna ma'al usri yusra, inna ma'al usri yusra. Allah is promising indeed with bad times, with hardship will come ease. Allah is giving this promise. So whatever we go through or are going through, we can't lose hope. Allah has promised this. If we lose hope, that means we don't believe what Allah is saying. It's that serious. So we can't lose hope. Third one, whosoever fears Allah, وَمَنْ يَتَّقِ اللَّهَ يَجْعَلْ لَهُ مَخْرَجًا. Whoever fears Allah, Allah will create a way out for him. مَخْرَجًا, a way out for him. If you have faith and you fear Allah, He will create a way out. Whatever you're going through, He will create. This is His promise. He will create a way out, and He will provide. وَيَرْزُقُهُ مِنْ حَيْثُ لَا يَحْتَسِبُ. He'll provide for him in a way that you won't even be able to imagine. So, if you think times are tough, you're going through hardship, going through cost of living crisis, money is short, family issues, relationship issues, children, marriage, whatever it is, if you think it's difficult, if you fear Allah, if you have faith in Him, He says He will create a way out for you, and He will provide, He will give for you, not just food, the word is provide, He will give you in a way that you won't even know, you won't even be able to imagine, that's how He will help you. And lastly, do you think that you will enter paradise with such trials that came without such trials as came to those who passed away before you? Do you think you will live this life and you won't be tested like the people who were tested before you? They experienced suffering and adversity. مَسَّتْهُمُ الْبَأْسَ وَالضَّرَّ. They went through a lot of hardship. وَزُلْزِلُوا. And they were shaken. They were shaken that much so in spirit that even the Prophet, you imagine, forget us, even the Prophet and his faithful, the Sahabas, the people with him, even they were saying, Mata Nasrullah, Mata Nasr, where is the help of Allah? They were shaken up and they were going through that much hardship. You think they didn't have patience? They had much more patience than us. But even they reached that level of hardship that even they were saying, where is the help of Allah? But Allah explains, Allah, Inna nasrullahi qareeb. Be aware, Allah's help is near. Allah's help is near. So you can't lose hope. This is just a short hadith about Allah creating, dividing His love and mercy into 900 parts, and He only put one part in this world. So all the mercy we see amongst ourselves, between brothers and sisters, father, son, mother, daughter, all of that is only one part of Allah's mercy. Allah's mercy is 99 times more than this. How can we lose hope in someone like this, someone whose mercy is like this, someone whose his book is like this, his messenger is like this. We can't turn to anything else apart from him. We can't go to coping strategies that Western civilization is giving us. I'm not saying to ignore what I said the first half. I'm saying the coping strategies that are used by our non-Muslim counterparts, alcohol, these are being used as coping mechanisms. No. Allah, within this state, in this description, we can't lose hope in Allah. I just want to quickly, last Quran verse, and then I'll finish. The Quran I recited at the beginning, Surah Kawthar. Surah Kawthar, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says in the Quran, Inna anzalnahu, Inna a'tainaka al-Kawthar. Indeed, we have granted you Kawthar. Indeed, we have granted you Kawthar. Kawthar, we know Kawthar, one name of Kawthar is the Hawth, the spring, the fountain that will be, inshallah, given water from by Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Anyone who drinks from that, they will never be thirsty again. Another meaning of Kawthar, the ones who know Arabic, is from Kathir. Kathir is a lot, abundance. So Allah is saying that indeed, O Messenger of Allah, we have given you Kawthar, we've given you abundance, and we've given you the Hawth of Kawthar. So what should you do? Salli li Rabbika. So pray to your Lord. Wanhar, and give sacrifice. Wanhar from Nahar, Ayyamun Nahar is the sacrifice that what we do for Eid. So pray to Allah and sacrifice. Remember these words, pray and sacrifice. Inna shani'aka huwa al-abtar. Indeed, your enemy is the one who's abtar. Abtar is cut off. Is cut off as in lineage. His family name is cut off. And I'll explain what that means. This surah was revealed at the time when Rasulullah SAW, one of his children, most people say it's Ibrahim, when his son Ibrahim passed away. When he died, because it was his last son, a lot of his enemies, they were getting happy, they were rejoicing. They were saying, Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, he's now cut off. All his sons are dead, they're finished. With them, his name will be finished. No one will be around to carry on his name, because that was the custom there. Even in our culture, is the custom, the surname. But Allah says, Inna shani akahua, it's not them, it's actually your enemy will be the one who's cut off. And this is how real, how Allah made this true. Even today, Muhammad, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, Muhammad is the most common first name in the world. Not here, not in Arab countries, not Muslim countries, in the world. You can look it up. The most common first name in the world is Muhammad. So is his name carrying on? Is it cut off? It's carrying on. And the ones that are cut off are his enemies. Look at his enemies. Who do you know is called Abu Jahl? Do you know anyone called Abu Jahl? Do you want to name your children Abu Jahl, Abu Lahab? No one is called these names, let alone Muslim, even non-Muslim. You know, non-Muslim and these so-called ex-Muslims. You have these ex-Muslims. If you see on YouTube, there's a lot of ex-Muslims, so-called ex-Muslims. Out of zid, out of spite, they can call themselves. Before my name was Ahmad, now I'm going to name myself Abu Jahl. Out of spite. But even they don't do it. Even the enemies of Islam, even they aren't called Abu Jahl, Abu Lahab. So this is how Allah made this true. But my main point is the first two verses. Allah saying to the Prophet, when is he saying this? When his son passed away. With the Prophet, if you look into the seerah, he buried all his children while he was alive. Only Fatima, radiallahu anha, only she was alive when he passed away. All the others, three daughters, three sons, or some say four. Six or seven, he buried himself. while he was alive. You'd speak, go and speak to the parents who've buried just one of their children and ask them what they feel. And then he's buried six or seven of his own. In this moment, not just the child buried his child, his enemies are rejoicing, saying, "Your name is cut off." They were dancing. They would say, "Your name is cut off. No one will remember you again." In this moment, this is a time to affect mentally, to be down, to be depressed, to be stressed, to have anxiety. In this moment, what does Allah say? What's the advice, or what is Allah telling, what is Allah revealing to the Prophet? He's reminding him, "Inna atainaka al-kawthar." We've given you a lot. Indeed, we've given you abundance. Yes, your children have passed away. Allah is reminding, we've given you a lot. We've given you a lot. So what should you do? Sit in the corner and just wait? No. What should you do? Fasalli li rabbik. Pray to your Lord. Wanhar, and sacrifice. Sacrifice. Rasulullah's child has just passed away. Allah is telling him, pray and sacrifice. Sacrifice even more. I chose this purposefully for this, to connect it to this. This should be, I want to finish off with this. This is our stance. This should be our stance. Not everything I've said before, 100%. It's real, 100%. Get support. But our stance should be, our approach should be what we are, what Allah tells us, what Rasulullah tells us. We have to be positive, remind of everything we've still got. Remind ourselves, remind our brothers of what we've still got. The families I worked with, they went through this counseling and talking therapies, and some of them made it worse because of this approach. So we need to have this approach. Remind of the good, remind of Allah, pray, turn back to Allah, turn back to prayer, turn back, sacrifice. We know from charity takes away bala, just like water extinguishes fire. I can't remember the wording now. But charity takes away problems, calamities. So giving, sacrificing more. And finally, this is my last finally. The hadith I mentioned at the beginning. This is hadith Qudsi. Hadith Qudsi is when Allah is speaking. It's Allah's words. Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam telling us, but Allah's words. Allah's words, but it's not Quran. So Allah tells us, "Ana inda dhanni abdi bi." And if you remember anything from here, just take this. I am to my servant as he perceives me. Ana inda dhanni abdi bi. Whatever my servant perceives me, thinks of me, I am to him in that same way. I am with him when he remembers me. If he remembers me by himself, I remember him by myself. If he remembers me in a gathering, I remember him in a gathering better than this. If he comes closer to me by a span's length, I come closer to him by a cubit, arm's length. If he comes closer to me by a cubit's length, arm's length, I come closer to him double that. And wa in atani yamshi, if he comes to me running, ataituhu harwala, I go to him. If he comes to me walking, I go to him running, as in his mercy, his help, his support. The first bit, I am as my servant perceives me. Our perception of Allah has to be correct. If we think, that's why when I covered the jinn and black magic, if we think that this is all Allah is about, that he is just putting me through this affliction, this is what will happen. Not because Allah does it out of spite. It's not that at all. It's what I explained earlier about the brain. This will happen as in everything you see. Whatever you see, you will associate it to this. Oh, it's this. Oh, it's this. Allah is punishing me. Allah is doing this to me. Allah, no. So what I went through before about iman and the thinking, it needs to be correct. We have to take lesson from these stories, from these Quran verses, around Allah's hope, Allah's mercy, have that at the forefront all the time, and we have the correct thinking. If I'm going through something, it could be a punishment from Allah. I ask for forgiveness, I pray more, I improve myself so that Allah will bring good times. And then we remember the Quran verses, with hardship comes ease, with hardship comes ease. I will end, and just to summarize the 3 points, I want to just point out, yes, mental well-being, very important, mental health, very important. It's real, it's not something that's to be taken lightly. It's real, important, so we take it as it is. Secondly, we take good care of ourselves, each other, as a family, as community, as a wider community. And then lastly, we turn to Allah, we turn to religion, we turn to hadiths, our focus should be from there. We take everything else into account, but the focus has to be, we turn back to Allah, we turn back to His Rasul. And inshallah, Allah will make things easy for us. I end أقول قولي هذا أستغفر الله لي ولكم ولسائر المسلمين فاستغفروه إنه هو الغفور الرحيم. I thank you for your time. It's long, very long. I knew it would be long, but inshallah it's still been beneficial. If not, it's from me and from Shaitan. Even if it's good, beneficial, it's from Allah. And inshallah, if I have more opportunities, I'll maybe space it out better. Maybe break it down, the sessions, maybe have breaks in between, and choose other relevant topics, subjects. If your things that you're interested, things that you think are relevant, or please provide feedback, give feedback to the volunteers, to Mufti Sahib. Our teachers used to describe us as, when we went to madrasa, mosque, these are all on donations. Yes, we paid a fee, very minimal fee. It's not enough to cover costs, but these are all on donations. The mosque is on donations, madrasa is donations. So these things are people, it's public money. You know, just like the public sector is public money. And not just like public service. Public services is public sector, is public money, but this is forced, it's a taxation and everything else. With madrasa and mosque, this is on top of that. It's people's generosity and goodwill. So you've invested in me, you've invested in Mufsa, you've invested in the mosque. You have a shared interest. You have a right. You have a right. So don't be shy. Whether it's here, whether it's sisters, don't be shy. Make these demands, make these, not demand, request, that we are interested in this. Can we have a program on this? Maybe this is beneficial. The youth are going through this. Maybe this will be beneficial. I can't come here as often as before, but I go to Ashton Central Mosque. The Imam Marana Ghulam, his bayans, Friday bayans, is amazing. Amazing. He covers everything you'll see covered everywhere else, but he covers it in a way, because he's got that education, the background, relevant, very relevant, making the links between the West and Islam, making the links between science, Islam. He does it really nice. If you've been, you'll know. So we want to be doing the same everywhere. It needs to be relevant, it needs to be contemporary. things that this young people and everyone can associate and relate to. So make these requests, give feedback, good or bad, give feedback, and then inshallah that's the only way things will improve and go forward. Jazakallah for listening. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Contact number.